gentle listeners, and welcome to a new episode of Prima Nerd Podcast. Joining me, as always, is my sleuthing co-host and cousin, Bela.
Hello, everybody.
And in this week's episode, A Game's Afoot, as we discuss Netflix, Enola Holmes. The movie is about Sherlock and Mycroft's Holmes' much younger sister on her journey, her quest to find her mom after her disappearance on Enola's 16th birthday. Now we're just going to get some, what's the word I'm looking for? Some business out of the way. Info out of the way. Housekeeping out of the way. The movie is based on a book by Nancy Springer called Enola Holmes Mysteries. There are 6 books in total. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2006. I think the first one and the last one was in 2010, right?
The first one was 2006, yes.
Yeah. And then the last one, I think, was 2000. Yeah.
Like the movie.
Yeah. And this is the first book. The director of the movie is Harry Bradbeer, screenplay by Jack Thorne, and produced by Millie Bobby Brown, aka Enola Holmes herself, and she is the youngest person to receive a producer credit at the age of 16. So, Bela, what are your thoughts on this movie? What did you think? Well,
first, I want to say that, come on, she's 16!
Yeah.
Like, she is already a producer. Mm-hmm. I'm 28 and I feel like, what I'm doing with my life.
That's exactly the feeling. But and she is actually the one who her and her sister Paige actually approached the producer with the intention of Millie producing and starring in the movie. And they were backed by Legendary Entertainment financially after she worked with them on the movie Godzilla, King of Monsters. And
So she had a brilliant idea and is a producer of her own idea. Okay.
Yeah. She wanted to bring to life a strong female role model for younger generation.
Well, it's amazing, but she's 16.
I know. She's basically the boss. She is the boss of Superman and Sam Claflin. Just saying.
Yeah, it's like with 16, I didn't know what to do with my life. Like, it's coming to university. Like, it's coming the tests for the universities, and I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to study. And she was like producing a film. Okay.
Yeah.
So now about the movie. It's very family friendly, and it's very different from the other movies of Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, I was actually going to ask you about that. What you thought of it compared to being a fan of Sherlock.
No, I mean, the other movies is more serious. This is 14 for teenagers. It's funny. It's colorful because London is always very dark and gray in the movies.
The Sherlock Holmes movie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
the Guy Ritchie movies you're talking about, right? The Guy Ritchie with Robert Downey Jr. as playing
Sherlock. But not only, like every time that Victorian England is shown on screen, generally it's gray because of very smoky.
Yeah.
Because of the time. And this one, it's more colorful and it's how can I say, like allegri?
Happier.
Happier,
brighter, okay, so brighter, happier,
brighter is better. Brighter. I like the movie. It's the kind of movie that you watch on the Sunday. You know.
Yeah, I can see that. But speaking of it being, it has a very different tone from the other Sherlock movies. There is one specific scene. The music reminds me of Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes. The music has a lot, not always, but there are little moments there that it makes me think of that Sherlock. But for me, there's
the violin.
Yeah, the violin, but which makes sense because, he's a master violinist. Yes. There's a scene, and I think it's between Sherlock and Edith in the tea shop, where they're basically mm-hmm. saying he's trying to discover where Enola is, and he basically says that threatens Edith, saying, "I know that you can hurt me. The teapot in your hand's a weapon, but I," you know, also mm-hmm. says how he can hurt her, basically saying that we don't need to do this. But there's a moment where she says, "How did you find me?" And it basically does that flashback where you see him, yes. and everything he does was very reminiscent of how it is in the Sherlock movies, right, where you see the past and he's explaining mm-hmm. it, the shoe, and then it moves. But it's also very yeah. much Guy Ritchie's style, that fast camera movement and slowing, picking it up again is uh-huh. signature.
Very.
And so they didn't do it exactly, but it was very much, it felt very much like a nod to that Sherlock Holmes movie, as well as a nod to Guy Ritchie style in general, that like moment where you see.
Yeah, it's true. And about the soundtrack,
Score? Yeah, when it's just music, when it's music of the movie itself, it's a score. When it's a soundtrack, it has like actual songs.
Okay, so score. By accident, I discovered that the score mm-hmm. was written by Daniel Pemberton. That was the author of the composition of Birds of Prey.
Danny Elfman?
Daniel Pemberton, something like that.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Both yeah. movies also produced by women.
Yes. I was like, okay. So we just saw Birds of Prey, and now we're talking about Enola. It was the same guy who did the score of both.
Yeah, and there's also the parallel too between the fact that these are two women who went to the mm-hmm. they went to the studios or wherever it is and yeah. pitched their movie ideas.
And the score is very good. Like, I love the score.
Yeah.
It brings rhythm for the movie. It's really good. Yeah. You asked it about Sherlock, right? Because I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm. No, I just wanted to know. Okay, so there's two things I would like to know because yeah. I unfortunately really only know Sherlock based on movies and things like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, fun fact: I believe there is actually a TV series about young Sherlock somewhere.
I don't remember, but I never saw anything. Like, I heard someone told me.
I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Really?
Maybe we should look into that so we can do a whole episode about Sherlock and do the different versions and where he's appeared in different irradiations in movies, TV shows, guest star, whatever it is. It'd be kind of fun. Uh-huh. But fun thing I wanted to know, how do you think the feel of this movie, the characters, does it feel like it belongs in the world of Sherlock? Does it feel like it's kind of like, yeah, because I felt her way of speaking, her things, very reminiscent of Sherlock. It's still very much a different uh-huh. character, but there's something about her that's like, oh yeah, they're doing a nod to Sherlock in the way that mm-hmm. she thinks and the way that she moves, but it's done in a very more, it's a very different character, because unlike Sherlock, she has empathy and cares yeah. about others, and she is talks playful more. And fun.
Much
and
more.
Yeah, she talks more, she's playful, she's fun. She mm-hmm. Has her own way of adapting, but she has this cute innocence. She's also a child compared to Sherlock.
She's a human.
She's also human. Yeah, there's also that too. But I wanted to know, that does it feel like it fits like within that world of Sherlock as someone who's read the books, seen the movies? Mm-hmm. Does she fit, or is it something that they decided we're just going to go a completely different route with it?
Well. Oh, and in the books, she doesn't exist.
No. Apparently there's a theory about them having another sibling or something like that.
I don't know where people always find a sister for him. Because in the series Sherlock of Benedict Cumberbatch, he has a sister in the end. And I was like, a sister? And now again, a sister. I was like, why? Do people like to give a sister to Sherlock? I don't know why. Yeah, there was a, but it's another,
that's how the series ended. Well, that's what happened in the series.
But it's a completely different story, and it's like other name, and it's completely different. But I thought it's funny that he already has a brother from the books, Mycroft, and people.
Is Mycroft is always is Mycroft that big of a jerk? Because in every iteration I've seen him, he's a dick. Is the best way to say it, or prick? If you're not, let's go with the proper slang. He's a prick. Why?
No, she's supposed to be annoying. She's supposed to be sorry. Mycroft is supposed to be like annoying. Like
he's supposed to be smarter.
Very
than
annoying. Yeah, but in the books, Arthur Conan Doyle says that Mycroft is as smart as Sherlock, but he's lazy. But he's lazy. And he's like, I don't care. I won't put effort to solve anything, to figure out anything, because he doesn't care. Like, not, he has a Sherlock cushy doesn't government. Care as well, but Sherlock likes the mystery. And Mycroft is like, why mystery? I don't like mysteries.
I'm making money. I'm fine. I have a good cushy job. Why rock the boat? Okay. Yeah.
He rocks, never says with what exactly Mycroft works, but it's like very close to the queen.
Yeah. It should be top secret, you know. It is.
Yeah. So it's like, this is very alike in the show, Sherlock.
Yeah.
The Benedict one. Is very similar, like that Mycroft is very, very similar for the books. He is very lazy and annoying, but it's like, okay, it's not so annoying as in Enola. Because in Enola, he's a jerk.
Yeah. Sam Claflin does an amazing job, I have to say.
Yes, he was amazing. I think he is very like handsome. And as Mycroft, I couldn't see his beauty because he was so annoying that I was like, I hate you.
Yeah, I get that. I completely get that. Of course, one of the most attractive things we've ever seen him in is Finnick O'Dare in Hunger Games. But I've seen him at, this is not the first time I've seen him play. Now I have seen him play an annoying, obnoxious character, but I've also seen him play a really like a horrible human being, and I forgot what the name of the movie is. It's a movie with I love the movie, and I find it really amusing for me, the movie, because Natalie Dormer is in it, which is funny because I think he just finished working with her on Hunger Games. And then you also have Jeremy Irons' son, and he's playing the love interest to Holiday Granger, who played Lucretia Borgia in The Borgias with Jeremy Irons. I thought that was hilarious. let me see if I can find the name of the movie, because I think it's a great movie. And also he's now in Peaky Blinders, but he was also in The Huntsman. I forgot that he played the prince in The Huntsman. The Riot Club was the name of this. It's a British movie. And he played a completely super unattractive like kind of guy in that. And so he's very good at transforming into roles so far, by seeing. I need to see him in Peaky Blinders, but because I've heard good things about that show, but it's very, he does a very good job of becoming kind of
good actor.
He's a good actor. He's very good at transforming into.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and about Sherlock, I read all the books.
I'm curious. This is where I'm really curious to hear your opinion.
No, the books of Arthur Conan Doyle, because there is a lot of other ones in the world after this.
Yeah.
But the original ones, I read all of them. And it's funny because he wrote a lot of books before the First War. And in these first books, Sherlock was very, very, very cold.
Mm-hmm.
So like extremely cold. Mm-hmm. And he was terrible with Watson. Because, poor Watson. because Watson cares about Sherlock, and Sherlock was like, "Ah, oh, you."
Speaking of caring for Sherlock, I love that moment when he appears and he attacks him in the restaurant because he's so pissed at Sherlock for in the show.
Yeah,
and you've also seen the parody, right? The Hollywood parody.
Yes,
you've seen it, right? First off, that parody, those girls are amazing.
Amazing.
That parody is amazing.
We can put this on our Instagram. Also, follow us in the Instagram. So it's very like, I'm very sorry for Watson, because poor Watson. In the first books, Sherlock is very cold.
The way you said poor Watson made me think that you almost were saying like Paul Watson. I'm like, wait, you're an actor that I bring up? I am so sorry.
It's okay. And I think his brother or brothers, I don't know, died in the first war. And after this, Sherlock became more human. So more sentimental, more like, not more sentimental, less
So he became more empathetic.
And so it's, yeah, not exactly like a warm person, but you know, it's different.
So on a scale from normal human being, normal feeling human being to Sheldon Cooper on Big Bang, where does he fall on the scale?
I think like 8 or 7.
Okay.
Seven and a half.
So less Sheldon Cooper, more normal human being, or less or more towards Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang?
More Sheldon.
Okay, like, so he's more Sheldon. Yeah. Yeah, where he sometimes cares, but he's still Sheldon. Okay.
Yes. And so he's cold. He's totally like a person that doesn't really care about people around him.
Yeah,
even
so far.
Even after this, like, he cares, but it's not so open.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've seen in the movie with Robert Downey Jr. and what I've seen in the TV show. That sticks to it. Okay.
Exactly. But the thing is, Henry Cavill was very... All these Sherlocks that I know, that I saw the movies, he is the most human and like the one that cares more about people around him. And it is still Sherlock, because he doesn't speak more than the others. He's very silent. He pay attention, and so you look his eyes looking everywhere and see.
And he cares for Enola. He actually cares what happens to her.
Yes, but he really, you see that sometimes he gets sentimental.
Yeah. And right. So what you're saying, that is very true. A lot of people have brought this up, and there's a lot of controversy about it. Which for me, I'm like, it's a different take. But I don't mind it. I definitely see that it's different. I see that it's a different take on it. But I feel like I don't know if I can really speak on it, because I'm like, I've only seen the show.
Yeah.
Did you like it as a fan? Because I don't know. I kind of thought it was...
For me, it's not Sherlock. You know? Like, I can see Sherlock, but it's not totally Sherlock.
Yeah.
But I think for the movie, that is not so serious as the others, I think it works.
Also, he's not the main character. He's also not the main focus.
It's not the main character, but it fits the world. Movie? Yeah, the movie, the world that he's living. It fits.
Yeah, I get
but
that.
But I don't know. It's not Sherlock. For me, the best Sherlock is Benedict Cumberbatch. It's the best one. Because he's very like a dick. Sometimes you want to slap him in the face. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in like it needs some really, really important on his face for he to care, to see, oh, okay, I have to do something.
Yeah.
So it's very annoying, but it's Sherlock.
It is, yeah. I get that. You know that the Arthur Conan Doyle's estate is suing Netflix and Nancy Springer for copyright infringement, right? Do you know that? Did you read about that?
Yeah.
It's exactly because of this. And now I was trying to understand, are they just mad about it? Then I found out, no, it's the fact that the character of Sherlock Holmes with emotion,
it's after the World War.
Yeah, is not public domain. So anything published between 1923 and 1927 still belongs to the estate. So they're mad, it's because they haven't released this public domain, and she took liberties to write it. Now I want to know what happened between 2006, when the first book came out, the last book was 2010, and only when Netflix picked it up to make it a movie are you suing? I'm confused. What happened there?
Wow.
What happened money? In between the
money happens.
I guess so. Literally 10 years passed. 10 years passed since the last book was published. 14 years in total since the book came out. Now they're suing.
But they are moving a process against the Penguin Random House as well.
Random House.
Not only Netflix and not only Nancy Springer, but also Penguin Random House. I have something to say about Penguin Random House because I
you said penguin and my mind went to Cumberbatch. Speaking of Sherlock, it's appropriate.
What's the correct way to say?
You said it right. You didn't say it wrong. I'm just thinking of him not saying it correctly.
Penguin. Okay, penguin.
You just said no, but what you need to as a Brazilian, which is the thing. This is it's random. Could you say random?
Random. Okay.
Just to make sure I understand, but you just said random. Like, yeah. Random.
Okay.
We have different ways of pronouncing ours.
This is terrible. Penguin Random House. Correct?
Penguin. Now I think you're concentrating penguin. On random. Apparently you can only say one word at a time.
Okay, let's try. Penguin Random House.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. I have like I have like feelings for this. Editor? Okay. Because I participate of concurso.
Continue speaking. I remember what concurso is.
Concurso para ganhar, tipo para concorrer.
Hold on. Raffle or.
Raffle.
Contest.
So I'll participate of a contest for some capes of books to them.
Covers.
Yeah. So
you said capes, and I'm like,
superhero cape.
I'm like, did her mind go straight to Superman? I know that you love the cape, but we're not talking about Superman.
See, I love capes. Come on. Okay, it's because
I know
capa. So
I know, cape. I know. I did. That's why I corrected you. Said cape. I'm like, no. When you said cape, all I can think of is you and I love the fact that you ask if someone were to ask you, what did you think of Man of Steel? His cape is amazing.
The best thing in the movie is his cape.
That is your response to what did you think of Man of Steel?
Cape. Yeah, but no, it's because just for people to know, in Portuguese, cape is capa and cover is capa. So capa, cape.
Yeah.
So it's very, so I went
one of those things that frustrates you when you speak different languages and you're just like, it's the same word. And it's fun.
Exactly. So cover. So cover for
which technically translates as coberta, which means blanket for us. Sure.
Maravilhoso. Wonderful. And the book was I forgot the book, but it was for child's book.
Children's book, yeah.
Children. I'm terrible today. What's happening?
No, you're not. It's just that in Portuguese it's singular. You don't say children's book, you say de criança, which means of children, of a child.
Okay, yeah.
So in English, we say the plural. That's the only difference.
and
am I right? I'm right though, right? I got that correctly, yes. Right? Yes. Okay, I understand both languages. Go on.
It was for like it was for a class mm-hmm. when I was studying in the UK. Mm-hmm. And my professor thought it was amazing and I had really good chance to win, but I didn't.
Oh, but still it's a cool
Carrie's story. War. Carrie's War.
What?
The name of the book. Carrie's War, War, I think it is.
Carrie's War, okay.
War. Yes, Nina Bowden.
I never heard of that book, so.
Yeah, I think it's English, like British. Yeah. I think it's British.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, this book. It's so cute. I did a cover, really so cute. Oh. But they didn't like enough.
Hey, but that's okay. The only way you can win is by trying, right? And you win some, you lose some, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just realized
I like my work. You know, like I'm satisfied.
We should post it on Instagram.
I will. I will post for all to you to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
proud of your work.
Yeah, but I never show to anyone.
Well, now you will. There you go.
Yeah, to the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
And tag Penguin Random House in it too.
Why not? I will. Why not? It was for your contest.
Yeah, why not? Say the year.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll catch their attention. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. Yeah. So this is my opinion about Sherlock. Like it's a good Sherlock, but not the best Sherlock for me.
Yeah. Also a super muscular Sherlock.
Yeah. Yes. Like why Sherlock has such arm?
Yeah. I mean, he's played by Superman. That's why. But
yeah. But I want to say that I see a lot of Sherlock in Enola. And that's I really like.
Yeah, that's
she's not a mini Sherlock. So it's good. She has like her own personality, but it's still some.
You can see the family resemblance is what you're saying.
Yes.
She kind of had that thing. Yeah. I felt that. I really did feel that she had a lot of things where she was like Sherlock, but she had a more mischievous, fun, kind of more mm-hmm. innocent way of going about it. Like when she like reveals herself and she's like, "'Tis I."
Uh-huh.
So cute. And like a lady when she's in the getting the dresses. I also love it when she first meets Twixberry and she's like, he says, I'm the Viscount something, the Marquis, the Basil. I can't remember how to pronounce this. It's a long name. It's a very long title.
I know. I just Tickersbury.
Yeah, that's also how if you find look at him up on IMDb, that is what they call him. Twixberry. I can speak today. Anyway, I love it when she first meet him and he says all this and she just goes, you're a nincompoop. And I'm like, I adore her. He's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
I
love it. Yeah. But I had a thought now that you were saying about Enola. I had a thought. Maybe she is the perfect combination of Sherlock and Watson.
Yeah, if Sherlock and Watson had a baby, this is how what it would produce. The brains of Sherlock with the empathy of humanity of Watson.
Yeah. Yeah, I always knew they were a couple, always.
I mean, they could be a couple. I don't know how they produce a child, technically.
Sherlock is amazing. He can do it.
Yeah, they're scientifically they found a way to do it. And well, yes. They would obviously have to be from the future because in that time period that the science was not as evolved. But I really first off, I think Millie Bobby Brown is absolutely perfect in this. She is so charming. I can't believe that sometimes I forget, and this is something that also in an interview with Henry Cavill talking about working with Millie is that she is a 16-year-old and a 35-year-old all rolled into one. She very much has that presence about her. I've seen interviews with her where she talks and the way she speaks, and she's funny and she's charming and jealous, but she also has the same time as she sounds, she's very like, she's still 16, but at the same time she says something and you're like, you're also ahead of your time. The fact that she's a producer on this already kind of shows yes. that balance. And there's a lot of behind, yeah, and there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff where she's like flossing, like dancing, doing mm-hmm. And she's like dancing around and doing all these things. And then of course she's still producing this movie. She's the main. She's the lead. And you know, it's just fantastic to see her. And I think the whole entire cast has great chemistry together. But I have yes. to say that there's something about her that I love. That is. She brings this beautiful innocence and like mm-hmm. playfulness and mischievous, but she's also at the same time able to adapt around her. She's just as comfortable dressed as a boy running in the countryside uh-huh. as she is dressed in her gown wearing a corset, which she says she said something about it. It's only a torture device or whatever it is that she calls it. Mm-hmm. For those who don't choose, but I choose to wear it as my disguise, so it does not control me, it does not hold mm-hmm. me down. I can adapt. But I like the fact that you show her ability to adapt, where her mother trained her to. You see them fighting in the scene of the flashback mm-hmm. where they're fighting, and yes. she's wearing dresses and she's wearing this, and her mom is obviously working with the women's suffragette movement. I think is the point yeah. of what the mom is doing. But you see all of this, and yet she's able to, she learns all these qualities that technically as a lady mm-hmm. she shouldn't know, but she also does have she also is feminine, but she also is, so it does, it shows a well-rounded person sense that she can fight, she can do this, she can do this, and that it's not saying putting her in a box of, oh, she yes, has to be this true. Way. And but I don't know, I'm explaining this well. Yeah. But there we go.
You know something that I really like it because a lot of movies take this character and mm-hmm. now this character, he or she, whatever, it's great on fight. He was training and knows how to fight. I think mm-hmm. this is, but, and in this one, Enola is a 16 girl. So when she fights with that guy that I forgot the name, I don't know if there is a name. Okay.
No, there is a name. I forgot what his name is.
There is a name. It's Lintor. Lintor. Yeah. Lintor?
Love the Lintor. Actor who plays him, by the way. He's good. In a TV show that I really loved called Torchwood. So good.
He's good. So she is weaker than him. Because she's a girl of 16 years old.
I don't think it's only just that. I also think it's the fact that she hasn't had enough training either.
Yes, but I like this that she knows how to fight. She knows how to defend herself. But also, she's not as strong as him. So she has to use her intelligence mm-hmm. to get away. So I think this is perfect. Because yes, she knows how to fight. She knows how to defend herself. But it's not the kind of move that do something that is not like, come on, you don't believe.
Yeah. But it's also, like, you also see that she, like, when she meets Edith, right? And Edith, like, tackles her and said that mm-hmm. I was your first teacher. There's one where she goes, yep, but you basically setting it up that she has a long way to go in the sense that she's like, you've learned a lot, but you're still not able to do it. Mm-hmm. Showing that, yes, she's been fighting. Yes, she knows how to do this, but she still hasn't reached a level where she can be like, oh, I'm a complete and utter expert at this. She's not. And I think mm-hmm. that was a great choice to make. And also, like you said, to use her intelligence of how to escape that moment. But I also, that scene, one of the things I thought was really cool about that scene in my watching of interviews and whatnot, is the fact that Millie decided that she didn't want to learn the lines for that scene until about 5 minutes before they filmed it, to bring it a realness to that scene of her being like, I don't know. So that way her reaction was it comes out frantic because Enola is in danger. But Millie's stress comes from her trying to frantically remember what her lines are. So it kind of gives it that realness to the scene.
Uh-huh.
And it was her choice to do that. And I like that.
That's cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I like the movie brings up something about feminism and politics, but it's not like the center.
No.
The background.
Yeah, but it's still very relevant to what's going on today. The
whole idea
to vote and how important it is, like this whole idea that he wants, the reform is happening, this growth is changing. So it's very much an it came out at a good moment. But I remember one of the things for me that I remember the first time I watched this movie before I did my research, I'm like, her talking to the camera, which I thought was cool.
I didn't like this.
I'm watching this. I'm like, this reminds me of something. I can't remember what, but it reminds me of something. It's something I've seen before. No, not Deadpool. Reminds me of something. What does it remind me of? It reminded me of Ferris Bueller. Bueller's Day Off. The movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off with Matthew Broderick. It's one of the 80s movies, John Hughes 80s movie. The kid goes off, he like skips school and he does this whole like,
I don't know.
I don't know how to translate. It's a very famous 80s movie.
Say the name again.
Ferris Bueller.
Ferris?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Life moves pretty fast. I think one of the famous lines from it. It's a scene where Ferris Bueller, where he...
Ah, curtindo a vida doidado. Ah, eu sei. Oh, I know what this... Ah, okay, I know.
And he does that. He does exactly what Enola does. I'm like watching it. I'm like, this reminds me. I thought for a second Deadpool. I'm like, no, it's not Deadpool. It's not Harley Quinn. It's not that style where it's...
Uh-huh.
It's Ferris Bueller where something happens and she looks at the camera and goes, you get the point. I lost count. Yeah. So it's very much has that feel of... And it was something that Millie discussed with the director about breaking the fourth wall, something that she discussed with the director about wanting to do. And I personally thought it was an interest. It gave her a different flavor. But I like about it is the fact that it's done not in the style of Deadpool, not in the style of Harley Quinn, but it's done in the way that's Ferris Bueller, which I thought was great because they had that moment. She's not like, she doesn't know everything that's going on, but she's commenting or something happens and she's just like, or like when, like she said, this is the point where you say thank you to Twixbury after like she helps him escape from the train. And he's like, thanks for what? And she's just like, and she like looks at the camera and says, I don't know. I'm exasperated here. I need help. Or like when he said that he's going to make them food and she gives him a little look. And so she's just saying, I thought that was very cute. And
my problem with this is that it was used too much for me. Like it's like personal opinion. Like I saw a lot of people elogiando,
praising it or saying giving liking it or
liking good it thing. Liking this and saying that it was like they really liked the of the fourth wall. But for me personally, I like it, but it was too much for me. It's just opinion, you know. It's not based on anything. It's just opinion.
Yeah, but I think something about it.
One thing that I like about this break of the first wall was that she's supposed to like be alone. Because of the name, and so her mother taught her to
be able to fend for herself.
In the world and everything. But she's never alone. Even when she's alone in the screen, she's never alone because she recognized that there is people watching her. So she's never alone.
Yeah, that's I never noticed that idea, but that's probably why she did it. That's a good observation. That's probably why she decided to do the breaking of the fourth wall. I think one of my favorite moments of the breaking of the fourth wall is the story she talks about the goat or the sheep walking too close to the edge.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she saves it and scrapes her knee and basically almost dies. And her whole mm-hmm. point of telling the story is to say, I need to help Twixelberry. Twixberry.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to help him because he can't defend himself. So she needs to protect him. Again, mm-hmm. showing how she is intelligent like Sherlock,
mm-hmm.
but possesses empathy, compassion, all the things we get from Watson, right? She has it. But I think it's also important that she has it because she is alone in this story. Like, she's the sole character. We don't have a Watson for her to be mm-hmm. Sherlock. Yeah. And we can't have her just be completely Watson without the Sherlock. So she has to be kind of both.
Yes, sir.
And also, I think it's nice to show that you can be both. Or maybe showing the fact that, you know, as a woman, maybe it's because she's also a female, she has the ability to do both. Not saying that's actually fully true, because that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's just like maybe that's another one of the things that they wanted to do. They wanted to make, how do we make this different? We put it a girl, but we also showing when we can do both, maybe.
Yeah,
right?
It's true.
I was gonna say that. So I love that moment where she's sitting in the corner, the music playing, also the score in that moment too is really well done. Mm-hmm. Her telling the story. And I like how it starts. It very much has that moment of being like, where is she going with this? Because it's not prompted for her to tell the story about the goat or the sheep or whatever animal it is.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing prompts her to tell. I think it's a sheep. I don't remember. And all I know is that it's an animal about to go towards the edge and she decides to save it. I love that she's telling this story, and then the end of it, it's like, I'm going to follow, be true to myself, and who that is someone who cares about others. And as much as I love my mom and I want to find her, I can't not help someone who needs help.
Yeah, it's cute.
And I like that. I thought that was adorable. I love that moment. I also love one of the ones I thought was really well done, because there is this is usually something that you see in movies. Usually it's supposed to be like a commercial break when they do this, like the fade to black when the guy stabs her. Fades to black, uh-huh. and it appears again, and she's okay because she's wearing a corset. She goes, I knew this was coming handy somehow. I love that. I find out that the corset actually has a use. Yeah. But I like that moment because it was very well done where literally she goes, and it fades to black, and it kind of gives you a second, what just happened? What's going to happen? And like, you kind of are like, wait, huh? And I thought that was a well done of that, but they also, the fact that they kept it very short.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't abuse it. They didn't overdo it. It was just like, I thought it was just a very well placed moment.
Yes, it was. You know, I'm very curious about what was the plan of the mother. Like, she was, she had a lot of bombs, I presume. That was bombs. And I was thinking of V for Vendetta. That was.
She had a lot of what? Sorry?
Bombs.
Okay. Yeah, for bombs. Some reason I was hearing bones and I'm like, huh?
Sorry. Bombs.
Apparently I'm not hearing well today. okay, bombs. Yeah. Also, maybe it also reminded me of Sherlock too, the first movie. Reminded me of the first movie where they're like looking for the ginger dwarf.
Oh yeah, it's true, but it was gas.
Yeah, but either way, it was like he was creating something that's explosive. That kind of made me think of. And that scene where she's running made me think of doesn't Sherlock Holmes run and there's an explosion with like Watson telling him no, don't go towards it.
And I think it's in the second.
It's okay, but anyway, that scene where she's running with all the fire made me think of that.
Yeah, it's true. I should have remembered this because, you know, Sherlock, but I remember about V for Vendetta. Maybe because this week I was talking about V for Vendetta, so it was.
And I haven't seen V for Vendetta in a while, so I don't remember it fully.
So I was like, she was about to explode the parliament. But I was curious about what was the mother's plan.
That's a very good question, but this is supposed to be a book series. There's supposed to be other
I know. Hopefully. Oh, speaking of the mother, Helena Bonham Carter.
Helena Bonham Carter. Amazing. I love her. By the way, speaking of Helena Bonham Carter, beside the fact that she's amazing, and that reminds me, I need to continue watching The Crown because she's in this last season of The Crown.
It's true. Yeah.
So I'm going to say three names. Helena Bonham Carter, Fiona Shaw, and Frances de la Tour. What do they all have in common?
Harry Potter!
Yeah. So we have Helena Bonham Carter, Bellatrix. We have Fiona Shaw, Petunia Dursley, and Frances de la Cour, Madame Maxine. What I love about this is that Helena Bonham Carter, villain in Harry Potter, Fiona Shaw, villain.
Kind of villain, yeah.
Kind of villain. And Frances de la Tour, good guy. Roles slightly reversed.
Yeah, it's true.
Because you can argue that Fiona Shaw's character, I forgot her name for a second, I'm blanking on her name, the character.
Miss Harrison.
Also the fact that she's obsessed with Mycroft.
Mycroft.
I found that was hilarious. I mean, I don't blame her. Sam Claflin is a very charming, good-looking guy.
Sam Claflin is. Mycroft Holmes not.
No. But I'll give her a pass. Because, you know. Also, I love the fact that Sam Claflin plays the older brother, and he's actually 3 years younger than Henry Cavill. Just saying. There's something else I want to say too, but another fun little trivia for you. Henry Cavill was in the TV show The Tudors, and he played Charles Brandon, right?
Okay.
Good show, loved him. He was, again, that's where I have liked him from, so I've liked him for several years, and I mean the man is absolutely beautiful and all that, but
he's not human. Come on.
No.
He's so superhuman that he's not from this earth. Sorry.
Hence why he plays Superman.
Yeah.
Hence why he's the only person who should have played Superman in our generation.
Come on. He doesn't exist.
No. Nope. Yeah. So he played Charles Brandon. Mm-hmm. Now, Benedict Cumberbatch played William Carey, which is Mary Boleyn's first husband, in the movie The Other Boleyn Girl. So apparently, with the exception of Robert Downey Jr., in order to gain the requirement to play Sherlock Holmes, you also have to play a character that tells the story of the Tudors. Okay, good to know. So it has to be you have to end up either being a superhero first, or then you have to find a way to become a superhero at some point. In Benedict Cumberbatch's instance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then at some point too, you might also want to tell a story about the Tudors. Just to make sure that it all falls into place for you to play Sherlock.
Yeah.
just thought I'd throw that in there.
It's necessary. Prerequisito. How is prerequisito?
The prerequisite.
Yeah.
Or a requirement.
A requirement is better. A requirement is better in English.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I miss Watson in this movie. Like, even just mention it. Because we have Sherlock, Mycroft, we have Inspector Lestrade.
Who's working for Mycroft.
Yes. And it's not doesn't really make sense based on the books, but okay.
Maybe he is in the books, but then they couldn't find enough screen time to put him in the movie.
Yeah, maybe.
I honestly don't know. I've never read the books. Maybe we should look into reading these books because they look really cute. But at the same time, do you really think there was a place for Watson? Because
no, doesn't no, no. I don't mean that he was supposed to appear on screen, but maybe just a mention. Like Sherlock says that, maybe Watson looked this for me, and I found like looked this brought this information for me. For instance, when Enola goes to the Tewksbury house, like the mansion, and passed by assistance of Sherlock, maybe after this, Sherlock could say like, oh, Watson told me that someone was passing as my assistance. You know, just to mention that Watson exists.
Yeah, okay. Now that, because you said Tewksbury, and I realized that that is not, I feel better that I'm not the only one who has a hard time pronouncing that name. But I want to know.
Tewksbury.
My question to you is this.
Mm. Yeah.
How did this movie translate into Portuguese? How did the names work in Portuguese? Let's start with the names. How did these names work in Portuguese? I want to know that one. Let's start there.
I have to say that the name is the same. They didn't
translate. But how is it pronounced? I want to know how this is pronounced in Portuguese. But that's fun.
Well, Enola is Enola.
No, that's fine. That's Enola. It's just slightly different. Sherlock is Sherlock.
Sherlock. Mycroft is Mycroft.
There's no. Mycroft is pronounced Mycroft. The same. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm just wondering. Mycroft. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Mycroft. I got it. Tewksbury. It's very like. I really can't say the really different. Like it's different because it's like Portuguese, but I don't know. It works. I have to mention this because of the Portuguese. There is a lot of work.
The ciphers. Yeah.
Yes, and yeah, in Portuguese doesn't work. Yeah, because you know, alone, they have to say, "Oh, alone is sozinha." In Portuguese, they have to put this on the line because.
Yeah, that is actually a really interesting idea. Like, how do they sometimes translate or make things work that are like very much ingrained in a language, right? Like you said, her name Ilona Holmes is an anagram is alone spelled backwards.
Yes. So but, they had to say, my name in backwards is alone, which is sozinha in English. They had to
add that extra line.
Yeah, exactly.
That must have been fun to try to cram that into the speech, right?
It worked. Like Brazilian dublaging.
The person who dubbed it, yeah. I forgot how you say dubber, I think. I don't know. Yeah, voiceover.
But yeah, it's really good. They like one of the best, and I think. But you know, sometimes it's difficult. And the names after this, or when she is spelling, putting on
my chrysanthemums, the name of the flowers and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. He had to they put legenda.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. So you kind of knew what it was before they said it. Yeah.
They put legends on the screen
subtitles for us
to understand what is going on, what is changing. But it worked. Like I watched it with my mom and my sister, and she doesn't speak English, and it was okay. They understand.
Both of them don't speak English, right?
My sister, she speaks a little, not much, and my mom doesn't. So it was okay for them, like to read and understand. So doesn't lose any information.
But it's an interesting thing.
But Henry Cavill was like in English. Mm-hmm. It's a best Sherlock than it's better Sherlock than in Portuguese.
I think in Portuguese, Henry Cavill's normal voice sounds better than someone else trying to dub his his own voice?
Obviously, that is his voice. So obviously it's better. But yeah. I mean, the way of speaking in English is more Sherlock than in Portuguese. In Portuguese, I felt more emotion.
Okay, so the person who dubbed didn't do quite as much, let's say, research or thought process into creating the character with the correct amount of empathy for a character who's known to have no empathy.
Exactly. So it's supposed to be more cool and flat, the voice.
Henry Cavill, I think, I think it's his cadence of how he speaks that also helps too. He has a very great way of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
In Sherlock too, the way he delivers his lines. But I also think, again, it's that thing where sometimes it really boils down to the actor. And Henry Cavill is, if you see interviews with him and things like that, like I've seen interviews with the three of them, like playing word games and all that stuff together. Sam Claflin is the complete opposite of his character. He's funny. He's like making jokes. Henry Cavill's more reserved. He's funny. He's very witty, but he's quieter. And he's engaged, but he's more reserved and kind of observant. Mm-hmm. And I think because he doesn't have that standoffish coldness about him. So maybe because he has that reservedness about himself, he's able to bring a warmth to Sherlock without having to do too much.
Yeah, maybe. Makes sense.
So when you dub the movie, right, you needed to find an actor who has that same ability to do that.
Yeah.
But it's not an ability that's always everyone has.
Yeah. Because sometimes it's very important for like the character, the way he speaks. The way that they speak. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, it's difficult, but sometimes I can find some movies that I prefer in Portuguese because of the way who did the voice. For me, fits more the character than it's one in a million, but I find sometimes I can find this.
I don't know. I don't like watching things dubbed. I prefer to watch the actor's actual work.
Yeah.
Like they put all this work and thought into it. I'm like, I want to hear, even if it's harder for me to keep up reading the subtitles, I want to hear their voice. I want to take the time to enjoy their work. It doesn't matter what language it's in. I want to enjoy their work. They're the ones who took the months and months of practicing and putting this character together and whatever it is that they had to do to prepare for this role, I want to pay respect to them putting in that effort. So I want to see it their version. I want to see how they do it because they're the one who created the character. The person just comes in and does a voice. Yes, they have to do some work, but they're just doing a voice. He's the one who's created the whole entire full character. So I want to hear their work. A cartoon is different. A cartoon is very different because what a cartoon is doing or like Disney animation is that I think that they have a little bit more leeway in creating a character and I don't mind. I think that one's, it also has to be dubbed because you can't force children to read. Some of them can't even read at that age, depending on their age. But I don't know. I just feel like I want to see the actors work.
I understand, but I don't know. Because I was raised in a country that there's more double music. Oh, double music? Yeah, watch.
Dubbed movies?
Yeah.
Dubbed. Because double is dubbed. Twice.
Yeah, I know. dubbed movies.
I must sound like a complete utter bitch correcting you so much. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay because I'm saying wrong, so I have to be corrected. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, but I always feel like I must sound like a complete snob.
No.
Sorry.
No. So maybe because of this, I can see the importance of this work because it's very difficult to watch the movie and read the lines.
Oh yeah, it is 100%.
So it's very difficult. So it's, and sometimes it's, you take too long to read the subtitles, so you miss something, you don't understand. So it's sometimes very important this for the movie to reach people.
Yeah,
you know. So it's,
yeah, it's a personal choice.
I understand.
Choice.
I see that what you say, and I think it's correct because all this, because you know all to the work of the actor and everything, and I agree. But and I can see the other hand, you know.
No, I'm not gonna lie. I understand the appeal of a dubbed movie, but I don't know what it is for me that I can't enjoy it when I hear it. I just can't when it's not the, I can't.
It no, just, I understand. I understand, but it's like, it's controversial because
not you know. Controversial. It's just, I think it's a matter of opinion. That's why they do both versions. They do a dub version and they do a subtitles version. So that way you don't have to choose. But then there are certain things, like for example, Hamilton, when you finally get Disney Plus, there is no way to.
Oh yeah.
There's no way to do that one. That one has to be subtitles. There's no way around it. Like I wouldn't even know how they would begin to do that. To begin to do that dubbed. I don't even want to know because it's going to be difficult. Like I can't even imagine it because there's lines that are so fast that are so there would be no way to dub it. First off, I don't think, because you know, you can't, translating a song to a different language is very difficult to keep the rhythm and the timing, whatever it is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole entire musical is legitimately just music. There is no words. So
I'm
curious
about,
because
I'm not sure about one thing.
About what? About Sherlock Holmes? About Noel
no,
Holmes?
No. About something else. And I just want to. Oh no. This is the play. It's about Les Mis.
No, Les Mis?
Yeah, Os Miseráveis.
Les Miserables, yeah, Les Mis. Or as we shortened it to, yes, Les Mis.
Yeah. It's because I'm pretty sure they doubled this. They dubbed this. And it's kind of difficult to do this because, you know, it's music all the time, like really all the time.
Yeah, that's true. But this one, I don't.
But there is a version in Portuguese and there is the version in English.
But there's also conversations in there. Like they do speak in Lemus.
There are. Like yeah, there is two lines in the whole movie. I remember this really well because I was looking for the lines. All the conversations, everything, it's sung.
So Hamilton is the same way. There's absolutely no lines. It's completely sung. I don't know what they're going to do. I just don't know how they're going to do it because unlike Les Mis, it's a rap.
It's a lot of rapping. I can tell you, like in a month. I can tell you.
Yeah, I'm curious to what they're going to do because I don't know how it would work in Portuguese. I have no idea. But I don't know. Was the version of it in Portuguese good? Of Les Mis? I don't know. It doesn't sound like music is a lot harder to translate. To translate.
The only thing that I remember about the Les Mis is that it's amazing. It's like it's one of like more amazing movies that I saw because of this. There is like no lines, only music all the time.
Yeah, and that they also sang live for that movie.
Annie Hathaway died singing.
Mm-hmm.
So I
and by the way,
how difficult it was to do and to do it so brilliant. But I can tell you that I don't want to watch this movie again.
Me neither. I love the movie, but I don't think I can watch it again. Also, just so you know, they sang that movie live.
I know. I know. That's why I was like, I have no words to say how brilliant the actors, the movie, everything is. But I can watch this movie again. It's very tiring.
No, it's a long movie, but I just thought that it was interesting. I'm just finding it fascinating that they dubbed it. So we'll see. But dubbing is one of those things. But what did you, but for this movie, for Sherlock, as that's what we're supposed to be talking about, as sometimes happens, tangents. by the way, I just saw this right now. I wanted to make this comment earlier, but we ended up mentioning something else and I forgot, now remembered. I love the fact that, I love it when she's talking to Twixberry and she says, she does this twice. She does this twice and I loved it. The only one I can remember at the moment right now is when she says, basically he turns to her and she says, but what made you like me? And she goes, I just said someone's trying to kill you and that's what you're focusing on? And I think that's the second time it happens in the movie when she goes to see him and he's like selling flowers and whatnot and she like runs into him and she says, mm-hmm. I discovered that you're in danger, but I also realized that I like you, so I want to help you. He goes, you like me? She goes, that's what you focus on? And there was something else. They're walking in the field. This is after she saved him from the train, mm-hmm. and she makes a comment to him, and again it's like, and it's like, is that same reaction of, that's your takeaway? I told you this and that's your takeaway?
Oh, I like him. He's cute.
He's adorable, but I forgot what it was and it's going to drive me crazy to try to remember what it was. There's something about food. It was something about something she did and she's like, that's what your takeaway is? Like, and I think that's the one where she looks at the screen and she's like, I
need help here.
She's like, I don't know. I don't understand you. And I love that moment, but I can't remember what it was, and it's going to drive me nuts.
I have one more comment. It's my last comment because I think I said everything. Is what's her problem with clothes? Hopeless.
What do you mean? Clothing? What's because clothing?
Yes, because every time she turns to someone, I will give £5 if you switch clothes with me.
No. Because it's not anyone, it's men.
I know, but it's funny because I think it's funny this because he